because it really is a draining thing, because you're constantly in this battle of, is this person right for me? Do I stick around? You start to develop insecurities, especially if you're the one who wants to see that situationship turn into a relationship.
All right, Tina, hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm so fantastic. I love that we chatted right before this and we found out that we're both in the exact same industry, all social related, and we met all on social. So what a small world.
Wait, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say it's a small world after all.
You know what? But you added better context to it, so I'm going to just let you have it. But like, for those that don't know, Tina actually reached out to me last year on the podcast page to just chat about all things situationships. And at that time I was going through just a work change, some life changes. And I like had everything kind of on the back burner, and I felt like I had overproduced a ton of podcast episodes. So I was, you know, kind of scheduling things out. And so, you know, life took hold. And a year later, I remember Tina reaching out and I was like, oh, this is the perfect time. I'm so ready to get her on. I would love for you to give everyone kind of like a little breakdown, like who you are, what you do, podcast plug, give them everything.
Yeah. So I'm Tina Ogallo, but my friends and random people who like follow my Instagram refer to me as Tina with an H. And I'm 24. Not me aging myself. I'm 23. I turned 24 in a couple months. Wow. I can't believe that rolled off the tongue so easily.
I'm 31.
It's just, do you not get scared about like turning another year older? Because I love my birthday because I'm very extra, but I cry every year on my birthday too.
Oh, you're one of those.
I'm big time one of those. My 21st birthday, I went to karaoke with my friends. I was sobbing on the stage.
You know what though? I feel like I continually go through like a crisis every time I hit my birthday. I can't say I cry, but I get it. You just wait until you're 30, because once you hit 30, then that's when you start having hip problems and knee problems. So you'll be crying because of the pain, not because you're sad of the year you're getting older.
Oh, okay. Well, things to look forward to. Excited for that. The industry that I'm in. So I'm a social media coordinator and producer for reality shows. It kind of, as far as my career goes, I like to say that, yeah, I did work hard, but I also manifested it. So I work for MTV. And when I was in high school, when I was in college, I kept telling my friends, I'm going to work for MTV. I'm going to do it. And then I was unemployed for about half of 2021. And then somehow this job landed in my lap, and not landed. I had to scour LinkedIn and the internet for it. But that's what I do for work. And when I'm not working, I have a podcast called In Your 20s. 20s with a Y-S, not an I-E-S. And it's just a show to help 20-somethings navigate this decade. Because when I was graduating from college, I always knew what was next up until my senior year of college. Because there's no rule book. After you graduate, it's like, okay, get a job and you hope for the best. Whereas for our entire schooling, it's like, all right, fifth grade, you're on a sixth grade. After middle school, it's high school. So In Your 20s is meant to be a resource for 20-somethings to, you know, have me and my guests to lean on when they're not really sure what to do next.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that I talked about this on another podcast I was on, where basically, you know, the beauty about podcasts is like, it's a free medium for people that are, you know, at any age to basically talk about things that matter, right? At the end of the day, we're not getting paid for this. We're not getting sponsored. And, you know, ultimately in a couple of years, if you know, you or I take these podcasts on, like that could be a reality. But even then, I think the beauty is this is like that free and open platform for anybody to relate to, versus watching something like, you know, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, where that's going to be a little bit more scripted. And in all reality, I can't relate to that. I don't have that kind of money. I don't look like that. Like, it's just not, I watch it for like that fantasy play, and that's about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why, like, when people come up to me, and it's so weird. One time I was randomly in Philadelphia with my friends, and I live in Hoboken, New Jersey, which is closer to New York, but I'm originally from South Jersey. And so I was out there at a bar just having a great time, and then someone screams my name, and they're like, Tina, Tina with an H. And I look, and I go, hi, do I know you? I'm a little tipsy. My memory's not the best. So I'm like, I probably know this girl. And she goes, no, I'm a friend of a friend of another friend. And I listen to your podcast. And I just want to say, like, you're doing amazing. And I love listening to it. I almost cried in the middle of the bar. I was like, no way. A random stranger. I guess not that random if it's like 4 degrees of separation. But still, you never realize who you're impacting. Because when I'm talking to the mic, and you probably feel the same way too, it's like, I'm just talking to the mic. I'm having a great time by myself.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just the most rewarding thing, because what I've always said, like, especially in terms of like dating, is for me, and the reason why I started this podcast, right, is I was having these conversations already with my friends, people like you, people like my best friend, my fiance, whatever. But I thought, or I realized, that most people weren't outward about their dating life. They weren't outward about certain things they were doing, experiencing, things they liked and they didn't like. All they saw and all they knew were A, porn, B, romanticized movies, C, like fan fiction, or D, whatever they researched on, you know, on social and or like Google, whatever, right? Yeah. So ultimately, it's like this opened the door for people to say, oh, I also feel this way, or, oh, I don't think porn is that bad, or wait, I do think porn is that bad, or wait, hey, I like that in bed too. So it just kind of opened the door for other people to, again, relate, right? And same thing where it's like that 5-6 degree separation, people come up to you, they see you, they're like, holy shit, I never thought I had the open door to say this to my partner or to do this. So it's really cool understanding that people are experiencing what you're experiencing. It's just a lot of them aren't talking about it. So we just kind of have that opportunity to say, hey, I want to relate to you, and you are human and I am human. And like, let's, you know, let's chat.
Yeah. It's also interesting that you bring up fanfics, because I was reading fanfics in my teen years. I would stay up till 4 a.m. on school nights just reading fanfics, but none of my friends knew. And now here I am, like, way out of college, and my coworkers and I, we all reference different fanfics that we read. My roommate has read some of the same fanfics. I'm like, why weren't we talking about this when we were younger? Why weren't we normalizing it? Some of these fanfics are becoming Netflix movies. Like, the power that this is a whole other tangent, but the power that fangirls and fanfiction hold is like no other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, also speaking about literature, fun fact, I learned about masturbation, TMI, from the book American Girl. I don't know if you ever read it, but like when she has that shower bathtub scene, when I was like 10 years old, I was like, oh, what is this? So, and imagine, but that's like how people are like learning, mm-hmm. right? Like, but it's not talked about. Like, and I was like, I don't even know that, like, if I ever like, you know, told my friends that until I was like in my late 20s, just because I was like, oh, wait, this is a funny thing to kind of talk about.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, tangent aside, so we're here to talk about situationships. So now that my fiance has made me an honest woman, I no longer have situationships. So we are kind of, I guess, are you consider a millennial, or are you on the Gen Z side?
Okay. So this is like an identity crisis I have weekly. Okay. I have always said that I was a Gen Z millennial cusp, but I think I'm the oldest, if not the second oldest, of Gen Z. So I am, in fact, a part of the Tide Pod generation.
Okay. Well, I guess this leads me to kind of my question of, in your world, right, in kind of how you, I think, were raised more with like that TikTok, Instagram world than I was. I feel like that was brought in a little bit later in my life. And I feel like that defines a lot of what do like relationships and situationships like really mean to you? Like, how is that defined?
It's not. I think that's the biggest takeaway. The relationships are not defined. And that's why I personally find myself always in situationships. I will say my experiences might be just a tad bit different, because I tend to date older. So I'm dating these millennial guys. And so even though, well, also I'm dating these millennial guys who think I'm so young, but we're only 4 years apart. It's like we were both in high school at the same time, babes. Give yourself a break. But because I'm having these weird generational relationships, it's like I'm expecting more from them and they're not giving me as much. And going back to the whole movie thing, it's because of the way that we were brought up with watching all these rom-coms, seeing these hashtag couple goals on Instagram and TikTok. My For You page is filled with one too many happy couples. And I am not bitter when I say that. I am so happy for all of them. But that's that shit I don't want to see. I don't care right now to see that. But yeah, for when it comes to Gen Z, like defining the relationship is not a thing. That's how people stay in situationships because DTRing is not a thing.
Okay. And so I was like, let's for shits and giggles look at Urban Dictionary and see what people are saying about situationships. Because I was like, why not, right?
Yeah.
Number one, let's chill, have sex, be confused on the fact that we are not together and have official emotions for each other. Very good. Then it's like a relationship that has no label, like a friendship, but more than a friendship, not quite a relationship. Okay. Seems standard. A state of mutual exclusiveness or commitment to an individual without officialness or label. These are pretty, you know, they're not as funny as I thought they would be, but.
No, that first one, I felt like a knife just like stabbed me in the heart with that first one. That was on point.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, and then it goes, when one person is in love, willing to do all the work and make a relationship happen, while the other one is a cutesy fuckboy or fuckgirl who doesn't feel the same way, but will have sex with you sometimes.
Ha!
Which I feel like at least both you and I can speak to the fact that that's pretty much adequate for both generations, if not all.
Yeah.
So I guess for you, like, what are your signs? Like, when do you know that you're in a situationship? Like, how long should you be in one? And I ask this because did I maybe listen to a recent podcast of yours where you said you were in a long-term one, quote unquote? So I just want the tea.
Oh my gosh. Well, it depends on which one. Because I found myself in two long-term situationships that I know why I do this to myself. It's because I love the attention that those people were giving me. Mm-hmm. But the telltale signs of a situationship. So everything starts out great. You're going on dates. They're being a great communicator. It's awesome. And then about 3 months in, I'd say, that's when you start to get comfortable. The feelings are getting stronger. You think that there might be a future here. Then for some reason, you're not hanging out as much. You go from hanging out every week and thinking that, oh, we're going to start hanging out more often in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Starts being every 2 weeks or so, you're still communicating. You're having FaceTimes. It's great. But that in-person connection, you're not getting it as frequently.
Okay.
And then feelings are involved. You might dabble with the term exclusivity. You're not sure if you want to be exclusive or you might even say that you're going to be exclusive. Then if you're like me, the most recent situationship I was in, we did exclusivity for a month and a half. And then I basically said, takesies, backsies, I don't want to be exclusive anymore because they weren't being, yeah, I said, no, this isn't for me because they weren't giving me enough attention. I was like, why are we exclusive if I'm not seeing you?
Yep.
And then that pattern kind of just continues and continues until someone ends up in a relationship or you block them.
Okay. The ultimate block. I can't say I've honestly ever blocked somebody. I don't know why. I feel a lot of guilt around it. Like, I'll just like let them hang and ignore them because I feel like that's more powerful. But it's like when they start seeing the green text, I'm like, I feel like that's too like petty for me, or I'm like just too nice. I don't know.
I did my first blocking at the beginning of this year because I said to myself, I am not going to let these certain people that were in my life hold any more power over me. So the first guy that I was in a situationship with, we ended things because he ended up being in a relationship. He was with that girl for 2 years.
They wait, broke. I'm sorry. At the same time you guys were talking?
Oh, yeah. I found out that he was seeing this girl and things might have been official, quote unquote, because he posted her on his Instagram of him at her grad party. And like it was a photo of them together. Mind you, I'd been talking to this guy for on and off for almost a year and a half. Oh, actually over a year and a half. I never got no Instagram posts. And I knew about all of his friends. So I was very much like, this feels like, you know, the end of our thing. So him and that girl were together for 2 years. They ended things. And he came running back because men, they always come back or their lives get worse, as Tinks says. So yeah, he came back. We talked for a little bit longer. And then we just cut things off because he started talking to another girl. And I was like, you're not going to have this power over me. For me to be your little, like, toy to play with and hang with and develop feelings for in between these relationships. Because how does that make me feel? It makes me feel like shit.
And I'm super fucking proud of you for cutting it off a little bit earlier than most probably would. I feel like I've just known plenty of people that basically still go through that relationship and they just say, well, he'll get over that other girl, or, oh, he's going to commit, right? So they have this fear of like losing out on this one person who's not even committed to them and they're committed to them. Like, it's very strange. So I guess with all of that, right, how does the communication work for you best when it comes to like your situationship? Do you like, is there like a timeline where you give yourself, like, is 3 months for sure? Or are you like, you kind of gauge it person by person?
You know, this has been a question that I'm always trying to find the answer to. And even on my podcast, I'm always asking dating experts, how long is too long? Most of their answers goes along the lines of, it depends on the person. Like, each situation is different. No, cut the bullshit. There has to be a timeline. I say that the timeline, once you should figure out if this relationship is going to progress or not, is around 3 months. Why should you wait 6 months to see if someone's ready to commit to you and to call you the person that they're seeing or their partner? Like, no, I personally love a good label. I'm fiending for a label. So after 3 months, that's when I reevaluate.
And then do you usually wait for them to come to you, or do you bring up the question first, or is it just dependent?
I'd say it's usually me. And maybe not to bring astrology into it, but I'm an Aries, so I confront. I love a good confrontation. I want to know the facts. So I always, it's not even sometimes, I always am the one to bring up the conversation.
I'm not going to lie. So I'm a Sagittarius, and I was like, I fucking knew I loved your energy for a reason. We're like, we're perfectly compatible, whoever believes in like astrological signs. Like, on the friendship basis, it's like the Aries and the Sagittarius are always my like two best friends.
Yes, because we just vibe the same way. Because I'm one of my guy best friends who I've known since I was like 6 or 7. To this day, it doesn't matter what we're talking about. I'm like, wow, we just get each other. Like, I can say one comment and he's like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, you shady bitch.
Just calls you out like that. I love it. Dude, okay, so you've obviously had multiple situationships. Like, I feel like for me, I can probably pinpoint two, and I primarily just like don't have patience. I feel like my schedule is just too insane to ever like sit here and waste time on people. And I think I've always been a serial monogamist and had like long-term commitments. So I guess, like, what would in your eyes be like pros and cons that you would see out of having a relationship maybe and a situationship?
I'd say the pros are if you don't feel like you're ready to fully commit. Like, let's say you've got things that are going on in your life that you can't fully give yourself to someone else. That's the pro of a situationship. But besides that, I don't think there's anything else, because it really is a draining thing, because you're constantly in this battle of, is this person right for me? Do I stick around? You start to develop insecurities, especially if you're the one who wants to see that situationship turn into a relationship, which has been the case for me both times, like both times with the long-term ones. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, there's more cons than there are pros. And anytime I hear someone in it being in a situationship, my heart just goes out because it's hard.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, I mean, I'm going to agree with that sentiment. And especially because the last situation chip for me that I can remember lasted years. So me twitching my eyeballs. So I was like, there was literally no like mental or emotional benefit there other than you, like, or not you, but like myself at that point being very like young in my 20s and being like, this is what I thought was my end point. So I was like clinging on to this person that ultimately was not good for me. Right. But you know, like, I guess with that being said, like, I feel like I can speak on boundaries now, but at that point, while I was in that situationship, like, I can't speak on boundaries. I had none. So I guess for you, like, do you, when you know, right, you're in the situationship, because sometimes you don't know, you're just like a couple weeks in, whatever you're dating, right? How do you know when and how to set boundaries, and what are they?
I would say, you know, when you set boundaries, when you feel your mood switching based off of if they reach out to you or not. I think that was in the most recent one I was in, that was the biggest indicator for me where my roommate could even tell. Like, you are happy or you're sad based off of if this person is reaching out. You guys get into a fight and he doesn't even want to communicate with you. He goes ghost for a few days. That's not how it should be. Mm-hmm. So it was really difficult trying to figure out how to set those boundaries to say, you know what, you're not fulfilling me in the way that you're supposed to. You say all these things and you say that you like me, but at this, your words and your actions aren't matching up. Mm-hmm. So one of the boundaries that I set with them was pretty much a timeline. Mm-hmm. And I said, you have to show me that you care. Because if you don't care, that's fine. We can go our separate ways. And some people might call that an ultimatum or me trying to push him to one side, like to be on the side to be with me. But that's just what worked for me. So that was one of the boundaries that I set. Another thing, because this guy and I have tried like 3 times. Mm-hmm. I gave him a week. The most recent time was a week. And I said, hey, like, if you want us to try again, you have to show me that you have gotten better. Because he had said to me, I'm in therapy now. Mm. I realize that you make me feel so great and I can be myself around you. Once he told me he was in therapy, snaps that baby. I was like, let's go. He's working through it. He's bettering himself. He's in a new career or in a new job that isn't taking away so much time and his mental health is improving. But then during this week, there was barely any communication. We had one phone call. And during that phone call, he had said to me, oh, yeah, I actually haven't been to therapy in like 2.5 months.
Oh,
babes, why even tell me then? Why get my hopes up like that? You know,
why waste your time?
Exactly. So then I said, you know what? I'm going to do what I have to do. And I removed him. Okay. I really am showing my age with this one, but I removed him from Snapchat. That's the only social media that he has and uses. And then I deleted his number. I had just gotten off of blocking him. So I was like, okay, I can't go back and block him because I can't let him know that he won, which saying that out loud sounds a little toxic, but we're going to roll with it anyway.
That's okay. I mean, you've got to get through it at one way or another.
Yeah, a block and unblock. Now it's just, he's so not in my mind anymore, even though I know like we're really talking about him. But I just feel so much better not having to think of what could have been, because I was infatuated with the idea of what he could be and not who he actually is/was.
Yeah. And then I guess, like, have you ever had like a situationship that actually turned into a successful relationship, or are you still like working through the kinks of that?
I am working through the kinks. These kinks, these knots are tight as fuck. And that's actually, I just started therapy, and that's one of the things my therapist was saying. She was like, you keep finding yourself in situationships and not relationships. I don't think I have trouble in the dating game whatsoever. But it's like, we have to figure out how to get you from what point A to point B without being in this weird unknown space. So that's what I'm figuring out within my 23 years of life. I've never called someone my boyfriend unless, like, you know, a random stranger was hitting on me at the bar and I grabbed the closest guy friend to me.
Okay, I like that. I'm always safety first. Been there. So I guess, like, with that being said, like, are you meeting people, like, organically, or are you finding them, like, online, or, like, is there maybe some sort of, like, path or coincidence or something that's can be, like, a dead giveaway of why these people are turning out the way that they are?
Ooh, that's a good one. Okay, so
playing therapist right here.
No, yeah, you really are. I love the apps. I know they can be very tiring. I also go on my dating app hiatuses here and there. But I have found that meeting someone on the app versus meeting someone at a packed bar, you're more likely to get a date from someone on an app. Because when you're at a packed bar, or just a bar in general, the person probably has some liquid confidence in them, so they're more likely to ask for your number. But then after they ask for your number, yeah, they might talk with you for a couple of days, but it might fade. It's probably going to fade away. They're not going to actually take you out on a date because they already got that ounce of confidence because you gave them your number. So they're good. With dating apps, because dating apps and swiping culture is a thing now, swiping right and getting a match isn't as fulfilling as it is when you actually go on the date. So I think that's the reason why most of the guys that I've gotten with have been on dating apps. And as far as telltale sign, I would say, and this might be a hot take, and which is why I'm so hesitant to say it, I feel like you're more likely to be in a situationship. And this is only in regards to hetero relationships and my personal experiences. You're more likely to be in one if you meet that person on Bumble.
You know what, though? I'm going to double down on that, just because I feel like Bumble now is turning into kind of like the Tinder of dating apps, where Tinder is kind of like gone downhill with it's more like sex-based from what I remember. And then Bumble... So I had actually, too long didn't read, I'd actually met my fiance on Hinge.
Okay, success story, we love.
Yes, so, I mean, they work. They really do work. I mean, you, like, definitely have to, like, pine through the whole kind of playground to, like, find your person. But ultimately, I remember being on Bumble and being like, this is not it, because I was getting, like, I was literally getting weird, like, not like sex messages, but like sex innuendo styles, where the dudes would like be sending, like, within their first message, like a bunch of weird winky faces. And like, it's not a conversation starter. Like, there was nothing in my profile at the time that was even drawing to the fact that I was like sexually driven by any means. Like, the dating podcast wasn't a thing, so nobody knew that I was even talking about dating. So they were just unsolicited reaching out in like very like uncomfortable ways. So I was like, not the platform. So I can double down on that, because you think about it, right? A situationship, like, people who aren't committed, they're looking for sex. They are just not invested. They're looking for the swipe options. And for hetero relationships, right? Like, I think a lot of males love to have female attention because they're not used to having it being flipped the other way. So now they're in a position to say, oh, I'm basically just going to respond to every woman that's in my inbox and call it a day and see how many I can date at once. Again, I'm grouping a lot of, I'm sure, good people into that, but that was just what I had noticed, at least from the app.
Yeah, you're taking away with Bumble, and the concept is great, because I do agree with the male perspective that, you know, it shouldn't always have to be the guy reaching out, for sure. But Bumble takes away the chase. It's because the guy knows that he is being put on a pedestal with this app. The bare minimum comes out of them, all of them, or at least all of them that I am matching with.
Okay. I've got to ask though, do you have like a type that you continuously swipe on, or gave it away, or are you giving other people a chance?
You know, okay, this is a mini story time, then I'll answer your question.
It's your playground.
So it's funny that you mentioned this because my roommate and I, she hates the apps. She is not a fan of them at all. So in at the start of the year, we were like, you know what? Why don't we flip our dating app profiles where I try to get you a blind date and you get me a blind date? And we did this, right? Unfortunately, didn't work out because we took too long. It should have been a quicker turnaround, like a week. And we were trying to extend it for like 3 weeks. But as she was doing this, she said to me literally today, Tina, I never want to do that again because having to interact with your type was the most grueling thing I've ever experienced. She hated it. And I was so offended, but was also like, yeah, I get it. You're right.
Okay, well, give me an avatar. Now I need to know, like, is it like the person loves fishing and is super Republican, or are we talking, I don't know. I'm just like...
Oh, I'm just girly. Talking
about people with a fish in their profile.
Oh, girly, you got my type already halfway down.
I know. Well, I only said that because I was on the last podcast I was on. I made a comment and I go, no female has ever looked at a man holding a fish profile, like fish in their profile, and said, ooh, like my panties are wet. Like that was never coming out of anybody's mouth. So why do men think that's okay?
Well, that's like its own little epidemic that we need to cut in the butt right away. But yeah, you were pretty spot on with what my type is. This is so off the cuff, but my type are the ones that you look at them and you're not totally sure if they're like racist or not, which sounds really messed up.
Oh, you were serious. I thought you were just fucking with me.
No, I'm so serious. And coming from a girl whose parents are Kenyan immigrants, like I should be dating for the culture, yet here I am ready to like yeehaw my way to a ranch with horses and cattle. I'm like, oh, if there's moderate in their bio, there's a good chance I'm probably swiping right. Even though I do, like, they just look, you can tell when someone looks like they might be liberal, but they're also definitely a Republican. And I always get catfished by these people because I always think, nah, they would vote for Obama. They'd vote for him. Yeah, it's bad. I'm trying to think of other, they don't seem like they're fuckboys, but they are. We don't do pretty boys though. Okay. But if they're like a guy next door, loves football, might be family oriented, but like also kind of dislikes their family at the same time, puts on a show. Yeah, that's me.
I think we found your problem. Your therapist is like, how do I tell her nicely?
She's like, this is all she needs to do and then it's going to be fine. Yeah, it was really hard because my roommate, her type is the exact opposite of mine. So we both were trying to like fix our own swiping algorithms when we were trying to find each other blind dates too.
That is okay. Well, I will say I do love the blind date idea. However, I feel like my friends would never know like who to pick because I feel like I don't really have a type. Like if everybody I dated has always been so different. So they'd be like, I don't know. We'll just swipe on everyone. Something will work.
Well, who's your husband? Like give me a little avatar profile description of him or fiance.
Yeah. I mean, I can even show you a picture. I mean, that's not going to do anything for the podcast, but he is 6'1", 6'2", light kind of hazel greenish eyes, light brown hair. Tall, lean, plays hockey, really like defined facial features. He loves yoga, dresses very like, I'm trying to think very, do you know the brand Violent Gentlemen? It's like a hockey brand.
No, but you already won me over with hockey. I was like, we love hockey guys.
He's a cutie. He's just a fantastic guy. He's super smart. I really love like anybody that's like an intellectual and like can absolutely challenge me, have strong conversations. He was like a journalist comms kind of major. So he can just articulate himself so well. So I think just, I forgot the most important thing. His humor is like top notch. So that's like basically for both of us, that's what won us over. Cause neither of us are soft. So we just like fuck with each other from the get go. So yeah, for me, a lot of it is like very like personality driven. And then, you know, everything else kind of like follows. It doesn't matter. Like most of the times people, you know, are super like, you know, social media is like very like vanity play, or not social media, but dating apps are all vanity driven just because you're window shopping basically. Right.
Yeah.
But if you're window shopping and you never give the person whose pictures you can't really tell what they look like a chance, like how are you going to know? And that was basically, I think, what had happened like for me, where you could, the pictures that he posted, basically he,
guys are so cute.
Change. That's what I was trying to do while I was talking. But basically the pictures that he was posting, like I talk about this all the time, were like all far away. He was wearing sunglasses and like you couldn't like really see what he looked like. I was like, oh, you're just like trying to zoom in and like figure it out. And then he had one definitive picture, basically similar to the close-up that I just showed you. It was like him and his sister. And I was like, okay, I could see what he looks like. I think I have a good grasp of this person. So like swiped, and then obviously we like vibed, and here we are later. But you know, like I feel like if I was hesitant in the sense of being like, you know what, I can't tell what 90% of these photos look like, or like I don't know if it fits within this like avatar, then we would have never met. But yeah. I just kind of like decided to look past it. I got a good hunch from the profile. There was so much like comedic value in like what he had within the context, and so I was like, I've got to like swipe and say yes.
And that's also like, it's a telltale sign when someone actually tries to put in at least some effort into their profile. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to put in their opinions when it comes to the prompts. I see guys' profiles all the time where they don't say, oh, match with me and ask me yourself as the prompt answer. I'm like, no, this is a way for us to find out if we are by any means compatible. Yeah. If I think your joke is funny, I'm more likely to swipe right as compared to, oh no, ask me. Or do you know that? I actually don't even get this trend right now, but everyone's using the parking emoji, right? I really don't know. I think it's some Gen Z TikTok thing. But everyone's using the parking emoji to just say, oh, this is cool, insert emoji here. One guy on a dating app, for all of the prompts, he just put the P for every single one. I was like, baby boy, you're gonna run this joke to the ground yourself. Who?
That's so odd.
And I think, this is just my random theory, but I think that he was hoping that his looks would be enough for people to swipe right, because he may or may not have a shit personality. Because what? Why else would you not spend 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes, answering three prompts that some you only need one word for?
And it's like so definitive of like who you are, because the way that you answer certain questions can be so psychological. Like, are you going to answer this with humor? Are you straightforward? Like, give me a little bit of something with your personality, because like when I'm looking at something, I'm looking for anywhere I can kind of like get a giggle, a laugh, and gauge that this person is just genuine and nice. But there's certain language that some people use that just feels very like uptight, or can kind of define certain like viewpoints that you might not agree with. So I'm like, do certain people just not recognize that? Like, to me, wouldn't they want to see that from the other person? And maybe it's all vanity to them.
This is something too, like for Hinge, I think it's the best example, because since you can actually like the prompts, I am more likely to spend more time looking at someone's profile if on Hinge they like my prompt. So like, I might not be immediately attracted to you, but because you liked my prompt and what I had to say as compared to just what I look like, I'm gonna be like, okay, let's see what this person has to offer in terms of their prompts, where they're from, political views, and be like, hey, like, is this, I think with swiping culture, initial attraction is its downfall, which is why those prompts really do help.
Yeah, no, I agree. But then it's like, but then you can also get like people that are catfishing you anyways. Like, you know, people post pictures from like 6 years ago and they think that that's relevant. So for them to sit there and like not even put some effort in there to their quote unquote personality when they know they're going to meet this person on the other side and don't look like their pictures. And I also say this because it happened recently to a girlfriend of mine. Oh. And the gentleman on the other side had just gained like 200 plus pounds, which, that's okay. I'm not body shaming, but when somebody, like one of my girlfriends, is super into like health and wellness and fitness, for her, she needed somebody that was kind of in that exact same avenue. And I'm not saying somebody that had like a definitive six pack, but somebody that was extremely active. And this guy just happened not to be, and he was lying about it.
See, that's the other thing. It's like, oh, but it's me. No, babes, that was you in 2012.
Exactly. You don't even work out anymore.
Exactly. I always try to update my photos to be within the year. For example, this year I have had 4 different hairstyles. My hair has been fully black. I had braids. I went blonde, which I'm never doing again. And now my hair is half black, half red. And so I am trying to make sure I'm including different photos. So when they see me, it's like, oh, okay, she's got red hair. Or like when I was blonde, because it was just such a drastic change from what I was used to, I even said in my bio, and for reference, I'm blonde. Just so that way, even if I was getting a drink with someone, they knew who I was. But in terms of making sure your profile is updated, this is where I think Raya is really good. Because Raya, the only way that you can be accepted is you have to make sure that your Instagram is connected. So if you want to put really old photos on your profile, that's okay. But someone has the ability to click on your Instagram and go through it. I mean, granted, if you're private on Instagram, Raya doesn't have like secret access that it's gonna make it public, but people can go on the Instagram, they can see how old these photos are. And now to the point where if I'm swiping on Raya and the Instagram doesn't connect, or they might've changed their at or something, I won't swipe right on them because I think they might be a catfish or something.
Oh. Okay, so questions. I've had a couple girlfriends that have been on Raya. So I guess they were like a little bit older. So I kind of wonder too, because age provisions are different. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing like, what are some of the biggest differences that you've noticed on like, say, Bumble and Hinge comparatively to Raya, outside of the big elephant in the room, right? Raya's like a more of a celebrity app. So like, what are there other like definitive things that you can point out?
Yeah, the first thing is no one has a bio. It is so weird. I put a bio. This is my go-to for all dating apps. If you don't like Halloween, it's not going to work out. That sums me up. I'm a very extra person, like I was saying earlier with my day for Halloween. I love to dress up. So you're going to have to dress up with me if, you know, we end up seeing each other. So I put that on Raya, was swiping for a day, and then I wasn't getting any matches, but I kept noticing that no one had a bio, to the point, I actually saw this yesterday, some guy's profile on his bio, it said, so does no one have bios on here? ? It's so weird. You have your name, your age, your profession even, and some people will even include the like company that they're at. But you will not get any information out of them about what they're there for, or even the one they say where I'm from or where I'm living. So I'm from New Jersey. I'll tell you exactly what town I'm from, or maybe not exactly, maybe like a surrounding town that I'm originally from. People from New Jersey on Raya, hometown, New Jersey. No, New Jersey. Where am I living now? New York. No information. I'm like, girly, come on, New Jersey's a great place. Include the hometown. It tells you a lot about a person.
Interesting. So, but in the sense of like communication and kind of how that all happens, and I'm sure that you've dated people on either app, right? Is there like a different kind of like streamline, I guess? Like, does it work the same way? Do people like go on dates, or is there like some verification process, or like, because you're dealing with like people that are, you know, like high profile. So how does that work?
Yeah, so I don't know if I can necessarily speak to that because I just got on Raya like 2-3 weeks ago. I was on the wait list for a year and a half, but I do have a friend who's around my age who's been on it, and she says to me that it is so much more difficult on Raya because everyone has this ego to them, or even when they shouldn't have an ego. The fact that I got accepted, I'm not going to lie, it boosted my confidence a little. It's like, okay, look at me go. But it's also, you're not really seeing that many celebrities or as many celebrities as you think you're going to see. Mm-hmm. It's people in so many different industries that I thought it was mainly a creative app. No, I have seen more finance bros than I think I have on Tinder combined. And the way that people are communicating, it's very much more reserved, as in they're trying to protect themselves, their status, their wealth, whatever it may be. But it's also, that's so hard because being on a dating app, you're meant to put yourself out there. So that's where the discrepancy with Raya, I think, is. If I do get on, well, not if I do, we're manifesting. When I go on a date from Raya, I will let you know, though.
Yes. I'm super curious because I wonder, too, if, like, people are, again, because it feels more exclusive, I wonder if people are more committed to the relationship aspect, right? Or if it is, like, a little bit more kind of, like, on the Bumble Tinder side where it's kind of, like, on that hookup, kind of very casual side because you think high profile, you think travel, tight schedules, right? They don't have a lot of time for relationships. And I wonder if that's true or if that's my own perception that's incorrect, right?
That's honestly a really great question. With Raya, so obviously with this app, you have to pay for it. So I paid an annual membership, which was supposed to be $10 a month, but little did I know they took out all of the money at once. So even if you pay for the annual membership, it's not like you're going to, and you decide you don't want to be on Raya anymore, it's not like you're going to get your money back. So there are even people who will say, I'm just looking for friends on the app now, because it's like, I need to still use it because I paid for this membership. I think Raya within the next year or two is going to be more of a friendship networking app instead of necessarily a dating app where it's like, oh, this person seems cool. Let me see if I can invite them to a party, or, oh, I think I want to try and see if I can get this person to come to my event. And maybe that's just because I live so close to New York and I can just see the way that people move, but it really, there's something about it right now that I don't think people are really on there for a long-term thing.
Damn, that's a really unique take. And I mean, again, I don't have any like personal experience, but I could see that happening based on like what you had said. And in all reality, people are looking for community and connection. So if that's where it's moving, that's where it's moving. You know what I mean? Because like the typical average person like myself, and I mean, you obviously got on it, but
also, you're not average. Not average.
Bad individuals. But you know, like, yeah, I can only imagine. But yeah, keep me posted. I'm kind of curious. We can do like a little follow up on like what happens next.
I will, because also I feel very humbled on Raya right now, because it goes back to the whole ego thing. So I think everyone can do like amazing, or they can all get like a Robert Pattinson or something. I don't think he's on Raya, but just as an example that people's expectations are so high, which funnily enough, there's a girl on TikTok called Alex Weidsman. I don't think I'm pronouncing her last name correctly, but she discusses this swipe culture hierarchy where it's like Chads who are in the top 2% of dating apps are like, I don't give a fuck, I can get whoever I want. Whereas you have, what are their names? Maybe they were Tiffany's, who would be in the like 6-7 range. They go for Ian's. And I might be messing up these names. The Ian's are in the 5-ish range because they're like, oh, Tiffany's can get Ian's, but Ian's are trying to go for the Tiffany's and the Bethany's or Courtney's, because Courtney's are above Tiffany's. It's very confusing, but if you just type her in to TikTok, you will be astounded because the hierarchy is insane and makes so much sense.
Oh, I'm gonna have to look this up. And while you were talking, have you seen How I Met Your Mother?
I haven't, but I do want to watch How I Met Your Father.
Okay, so I only say this because I just recently watched an episode where basically one of the points in the conversation was, in every relationship, there's a reacher and a settler. Basically, the reacher reaches for the person that was like out of their, like, is like out of their league, and the settler basically settles. And it was like an episode where they talk about like jealousy. So like the reacher is always going to be like trying to get that person to be jealous. And the other person's like, oh, that's cute. Okay, whatever. So it just kind of like reminded me of the hierarchy. Like there's a hierarchy in swiping, and then that ultimately leads to the Reacher and the Settler. Don't know how true that is, but you know, I'm sure it's out there.
It sounds pretty true. I wouldn't put it past, because also when you look at couples, and this is just a society thing that you'll hear in conversations on movies with different friend groups, you look at a couple and you go, oh, she could do so much better, or they could do so much better, which is a toxic conversation in general. But going to the whole Reacher Settlers concept, it kind of sounds like that's like how it derived from, so to speak.
Exactly. I can absolutely see that happening. But then people fucking forget, right? I just kind of bringing back to this toxicity thing. I'm like, do we not think about that? Those people have like incredible personalities and the looks fade, and there's so much more outside of this whole vanity play. Can people just get past it?
That's the thing. And even my friend, my roommate was saying, you know, when it comes to these guys that you're seeing, you know, you can do better than them. Like, you know, you're hotter than them. And this is usually after I've gotten my heart broken or vice versa. But I say, yeah, I mean, I'll totally agree with you. I'm on my hot girl shit, but also
there, I can attest, 20 out of 10.
Oh, thank you. Like, they make me feel so good and like happy and content that I'm personally drawn to people's energy and what they exert out into the world. So I'm like, if you look like a little dork, I'm going to love you. I didn't know what word to use besides dork, but we're just going to go with that.
Yeah, I like the boy next door concept. I like that. But you actually set up like a perfect segue to a question I have. So situation breakups are a thing. And you just mentioned getting your heart broken by multiple people that you were seeing. So tell me all about it. Like, what's the coping? How do you break up in a situationship? Like, everybody is so different. Like, what's your hot take?
Well, going back to communication, because it's non-existent, situationships will usually end in a text. 9 times out of 10, it will end in a text or a ghost. So I'll say first, it's going to be a fade out, as in the relationship kind of just fizzles. You guys aren't really reaching out and communicating as often as you were, even though the communication was already barely anything. And then once that fizzle happens, you've got maybe a week or two where there's radio silence. That's the ghosting. Then you receive a text. You receive it, or you might send it. It just depends on who's willing to cave. And that text is a breakup text, but not. You're kind of just saying, hey, I've had fun, but I don't think that we're right for each other. Actually, no. They never say that they don't think they're right for each other, because they always leave the door open. It's usually an open-ended conversation where we'll see where things go down the line. Now, when it comes to coping, I like to cry. I cry in my bed for a couple hours, get some takeout. My favorite food is Applebee's spin dip, so I have to get some Applebee's. And the best way to get over a situationship, this might just be me personally, but I love a good distraction. As in, I'm gonna go out. I remember the situationship that I was in that really had me down bad. I was sobbing from like 10 p.m. at night, went to bed, fell asleep crying, woke up, cried the entire day up until 3 p.m. when some guy had asked me out on a same day date. And I said yes. And by 7 p.m., I was at the restaurant, wine in hand, having a chit chat.
You know what? And they say the best medicine is, right, to get over one, you get under another. Not saying that you physically did, but same concept.
But it helps. And then you just go out after, or you do things to take your mind off of it. Because at the end of the day, whoever is sending that open-ended text, they're not thinking about you. And I've done the same thing. Like, if I send a text where I'm ending things, I'm not thinking about that person. I'm enjoying my life and having fun. So it's like you have to get into that mindset where you can put your energy into it and you're going to, like, it's not going to be, you're going to get over it in a day, but having these other distractions to fill your mind with other thoughts are going to help.
Mm-hmm. No, that's, yeah, I absolutely agree. Do you have like a morning period that you give yourself? Like some people are like, all right, I'm only giving myself, you know, 2 days. And then after that, I need to sack up and start over. Like, do you have like a timeline?
I don't. And the reason for it is because since, you know, you were in this really weird headspace, once you're, you know, that you're in this situationship of, am I good enough? Or is there something I could have done differently? That it's going to take a while for you to rewrite that in your head. You have to shift every little perspective that you had about that relationship in your head. So I don't give myself a timeline. Is it sometimes maybe like 2 months that I'm still thinking about this person? Yeah. But over time, I like to use the analogy or reference. I don't know who exactly said it, but it goes to grief, for example. Like when you have grief, let's imagine that there's a square that you draw out. And in this square or box, there's a bouncy ball in it. And it's a really big ball at first. And you can't really move. The grief completely takes over you. You just don't know what to do. And over time, the ball is very slowly starting to get smaller. And then it's not touching all the walls as often. And once it starts to get really small, like penny size, it'll just bounce here and there where you might not even think about it for weeks. You might not think about it for months. And then randomly you might be out somewhere and that person is your mind. And those feelings come back. And they might not come back as powerful, but you're still like, wow, I can't believe I put myself through that. And it's not it's also not self-pity, but it's just like, okay, I'm acknowledging that this is how I felt. I moved on. I learned from the situation. And at least now I know what does not suit me and the actual needs that are required from a future partner.
Yeah, I actually love that box of grief. I think that kind of apply to like all aspects of life, not just dating. And I think that that was the best like visual representation, because I started thinking about like certain points in my life when I've grieved, like, and that was out, you know, within dating, outside of dating. And I was like, wow, the reality of that until that kind of large size ball deflates is so true and so real. And whenever you're in those situations of grief, I think you ultimately think, my life is going to be like this forever. I'm always going to feel like this. This person is always, or this thing is always going to impact my mind and penetrate everything I do, when that's ultimately not the case. And we end up just having these like crazy blinders on that we need to take off and think about that box and think about that ball and think about that it all takes time to basically deflate and deplete. So your ball is depleting and it's deflating. That person comes back and they text you again because they've left it open-ended. What now?
Oh, you go back into it. You stir the pot. You're ready to go. I'm really bad at it, being totally honest with you. I will entertain the thought because I do, when it comes to situationships, I do put those people in this facade that, yeah, we're going to end up together. And that's probably the first one or two times that they reach out. By third time, fourth time, that facade is no longer there. I could give less of a fuck about them. But because it didn't work out the first time, and we always grew up with people saying, everyone deserves a second chance, that I always want to give that person a second chance. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people change. I do believe that people can change. But most of the time, if that person has either gotten out of a relationship and is going back to you, they haven't changed. They're looking for some type of comfort and normalcy from what life was like for them before they got in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they weren't in a relationship, but they were like, I've fucked around a little bit. This person made me feel really good. And I feel like it's a relationship, but without the strings attached to it. I kind of want that person in my life again for a little bit. It's usually never going to work out. I hate to break it to you guys, especially because that means that my last situationship might have been a waste of time. But once again, a learning experience. See, I'm still shifting the perspective every time.
I love that. But everything, you know, everything is a learning experience. You like walking down the street and something happens, you lose something. That's all a learning experience, right? Like, it's just like you said, right? It's just flipping that mindset. So I guess with that being said, kind of like something to like encapsulate all this and to cap it all out, like what advice do you have for somebody that might be going through a situationship, is about to get their ass into one, or is trying to just get over it?
Oh gosh. Okay. Well, I will say that when you're in this situationship, you're going to feel really good. And your friends, the people that you're surrounding yourself with that are seeing you in this situationship, they are going to want the best for you. And they're going to talk very lowly about this person. You are not going to see it. You're not going to believe it. And that's okay to not want to hear what they have to say, because you're getting these boosts of serotonin from said person. But once you're out of the situationship, just thank your friends, because they are going through it with you. They're going through the highs, the lows. They're hearing you complain about it. They're hearing the really fun moments. But thank your friends, because your friends are going to stay there with you through it all. And you're going to come out stronger, better, smarter than when you got into that situationship, because like you said, everything is a lesson. And if worse comes to worse, you know, just go out and party. That always makes me feel better.
You know what? I mean, hey, you gotta have fun. You gotta go out, and who knows? You might meet your next situationship at the bar.
Hey, at this point, I'm personally I'm open arms. I'm like, who's next? Come on. Let's have it.
I freaking love that. Well, Tina, where can people find you? Plug in that pod again, your personal channels, whatever you want to give away.
Yeah. Well, thank you again so much for having me. This has been so fun and low key a therapy session. Who knows? Maybe I'll cancel next week with mine.
Please still go, but also we'll just have to do another therapy session.
Yeah, I think she'd be like so mad at me if I did. But thank you again. And where you guys can find the In Your 20s podcast, where we talk about, you know, navigating through your 20s. We have guests that are in their 20s, out of their 20s. Like, even though that's the name of the podcast, we really do have a wide age range. In Your 20s is 20s with a YS at the end, not an IES. And it's at In Your 20s on Instagram. As far as my personal channels, if you just search Tina with an H anywhere, so that's T-I-N-A space W / N-H, you will find me. But it's TINAH.OGALO on Instagram and wherever else, because there's only one Tina Ogallo on this planet as of now.
Damn. Okay.
I love that. It's a very easy Google stalk when people are trying to find me or get information about me.
This is true. And you are also linked on your own podcast channel. So, hey.
Exactly.
But I will absolutely link all of that out in like the show notes and whatnot. But Tina, you are awesome. I freaking loved having you on. I think you just have such fantastic insight, and you just have a stellar personality that's, you know, gravitating towards anybody. So I appreciate you just reaching out, and I'm super excited to have you on again.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. Please, when the next time I'll come on, I won't be in a situationship. I'll be, who knows, maybe I'll be engaged.
And maybe you'll just meet your next man's on Hinge and get engaged, and we can just have like engaged weddings together. I don't know.
I literally am going to go and reactivate Hinge right now. You have no idea.
You're going to find your next love. But my love, you are fantastic. Thank you. I will absolutely have you on. And until next time.